WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and before we get to our first guest this hour, I want to alert you that right now on our politics website, it's freecountry.org, we have a brand new expose of the design problems with the New York State election ballots. You just heard it mentioned on the news. This just came to our attention yesterday, and we worked up an annotated ballot to show you how to avoid voting for the wrong person on November 2nd. For example, if you want to vote for Carl Paladino on the taxpayer party line, and we know so many of you do, it looks to us like it'll be all too easy to accidentally vote for Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate. Now, you can see the whole story of the election ballot design problems, including the actual ballot, at our politics website. It's a freecountry.org, and see some of the other pitfalls on that ballot. Also on the site, by the way, we have a new blog post from Feed Into Worlds reporter Annie Coryell about Kirsten Gillibrand trying to make peace right now with the immigrant community at itsafreecountry.org. We also hope that everybody will pledge today. We'll talk more about that later, but thank you for considering becoming a member of WNYC, not just a listener of WNYC, or renewing your membership today on this first day of our fall membership drive. Do it at WNYC.org or 1-888-376-9692, and more about that later. But imagine walking across the Brooklyn Bridge and looking over the river. Can you imagine the Manhattan skyline, South Street Seaport, Statue of Liberty? Now imagine a second layer of buildings, towers floating off the shore, filled with plants and vegetables. Each tall spiraling column is a self-sufficient farm that not only feeds the city, but helps process its waste as well. That's the vision, or at least one of the ways it might manifest, of Dixon Despommier, professor of public health and environmental sciences at Columbia University and author of the new book, The Vertical Farm, Feeding the World in the 21st Century. Professor, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Tell us about the vertical farm. What does that mean?
Well, it began as a classroom project. About 11 years ago, I had seven graduate students who got tired of hearing about environmental degradation all the time from me. So they petitioned me to change the subject, and the subject was something more positive for the city and perhaps something of global importance. And the next thing you knew, we were farming on the tops of roofs. That project didn't actually work out too well, but at the end of the day, I said, why don't we just take the rooftop concept and move it indoors and see
indoors.
What happens. Indoors.
This is about farming indoors.
It is, actually. It's the use of hydroponics and another technology that's been recently developed called aeroponics. And you can grow anything like that.
And you see this as at the intersection between the environmental movement, the locavore movement, and the organic movement.
Indeed. The more this idea became possible by our brainstorming through it over the last 11 years in the class and then out of the class as I began to be invited to other meetings where this topic was part of the conversation. Pretty soon engineers began to show up and say, well, we'll gladly help you do this. And next thing you know, we're designing them.
So this image that I was describing a minute ago, a second layer of buildings.
Right.
Off the shore, floating in the water, filled with plants and vegetables,
right.
Tall spiraling columns, self-sufficient farms.
Yes.
Is that actually possible?
Everything is possible. When I say, is it probable? I think it's going to have to start with something more tangible and more scalable to human conditions. I think rooftops, perhaps maybe three or four stories above them, and add-ons to new restaurants and perhaps even eco-center schools that have a vertical farm complex associated with that to teach kids about the ecology of how plants work.
And certainly rooftop gardens are becoming ever more popular in the New York area.
No question.
And so that's a starting point. When you said you tried some experiments with this, you ran into some problems. What were the obstacles?
Well, mostly they were codes to the buildings themselves, you know. What can you put on top of an already built apartment house and how strong are the roofs and this sort of thing? But remember, this is not with soil. So that as soon as people found out that this was hydroponic and the weight loads are much less, we began to redesign them and got some traction with it.
For people who don't know, what does hydroponic mean and how does it work?
It's simply the addition of nutrients to water and then exposing the root systems of a plant to that, and they'll take them up gladly. So it's called nutrient film technology, basically. It's very thin films of water. It uses about 70% less water than outdoor irrigation farming.
Are there any vertical farms up and running right now, any in production or models out there?
Well, there's a lot of planning right now. I must tell you that there's an excitement about this that's recently been generated because of the food security and food safety issues associated with having to import, let's say, 90% of your foodstuffs. That's the country of Qatar has that problem right now, and so do a lot of other Middle Eastern countries. So they're extremely interested in applying the hydroponic and aeroponic technologies to their own situations.
Are there crops that make more sense for vertical farming and crops that make less sense?
Well, you know, you'd think so, because let's take a crop like corn, which everybody conceives of as growing outdoors and as tall as an elephant's ear, so to speak. But to be honest with you, we can grow about 6 to 8 crops of corn indoors compared to the one crop of outdoor corn. So even if you're Monsanto and you want to raise a lot of corn for whatever purposes they want to raise corn for, but it certainly isn't human food, they can do this better in a tall building under controlled conditions. So I think it's limitless, basically.
How about livestock?
I'm going to stop short of livestock. They're not corn, that's for sure. They're probably the ones that eating your corn.
No chickens, pigs.
No, chickens. Chickens would be good. And fish and mollusks and crustaceans. So you can couple these things with aquaculture to make a closed-loop ecology out of it.
Fish require water, which does get heavy if you're going to put it on a roof.
This
right?
is true. That would go into the basement.
Uh-huh. Let's talk about some logistics here. How much land would be needed to be given over to vertical farming before you could make a dent in, say, New York City food consumption?
Well, that's a great question, because if you look around New York, of course, the land that's available is either already spoken for or extremely expensive to remodel. But there are some exceptions, and one of them is Floyd Bennett Air Force Base. Another one could be Governor's Island. And then you've got the periphery of New York City, just at the edge of the city limits, where you've got plenty of space to insinuate these buildings and to start forward with it.
And would it be feasible to float a series of farms, say, in the Hudson River or in the harbor?
You know, we've had some students actually work through problems like that. One of the groups was interested in making a vertical farm complex for Japan. And, of course, in Japan, they have a lot of earthquakes. So they said, well, why don't we just put this on a ship and have it fairly tall, maybe 6 to 8 stories tall. The keel of the boat would be far below the water level. And yeah, I mean, it's feasible, but I think we should start on land first.
And you write about vertical farms as a method for overhauling the entire way that urban spaces work. Yeah. New York is pretty far away from being a sustainable place.
This is true.
You're writing about more than just engineering here, then.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what this is the centerpiece for the eco-city. And if you look at an ecosystem as the model that nature has up and running already, then why can't we imitate that with our technologies? And the answer is we can, and we have all the pieces in place. We just haven't put them all together in one place yet.
But it would still necessitate a sea change in how we deal with the products that we consume,
no
wouldn't
question.
It?
Oh, sure, of course it would. Sure. This is a revamping of the entire system. You're absolutely right.
Where does gray water come in?
Uh-huh.
And remind people what gray water is,
sure,
and why vertical farming could help deal with that problem.
Well, gray water is derived from black water, shades of gray to black. Black water is actually a combination of urine and feces and everything else we flush down that toilet and wash down our sinks and out of our bathtubs. So that all collects together at these waste treatment plants. That's called black water. The moment you remove the solids from it, it's now called gray water. Now, we can actually remediate gray water. In fact, it's being done all over the world right now in some interesting places like Santa Ana, California, for instance. It has a water shortage problem, and they solved it by actually reusing their own, if you will, water.
So there would be a political will necessary for vertical farms to become commonplace, because people are thinking, you know, hey, this Dixon Depommier, he's a pretty interesting guy, but boy, what a dreamer. So how far away are we from the reality?
Well, I think necessity is the mother of invention. I hate that quote, but it's actually true. You need a father for the invention as well, because unless it's an immaculate conception. So what we have is places throughout the world where this is absolutely necessary, and the Middle East is one of those places, and countries like Jordan and all of the Emirates and Saudi Arabia, and look at all the places that don't have water or have polluted water, Southeast Asia, South Asia, China. There's a huge flood right now going on in Thailand. When that recedes, the farmland will be gone. So those are places where these people are, they're abandoning their former farms and moving into the cities. Give them jobs. Let them work in vertical farms.
Combining the organic, environmental, and locavore movements, the ideas starting to be heard around the world, and maybe you heard it here first, Dixon Depommier, Professor of Public Health and Environmental Sciences at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University, author of the new book, The Vertical Farm, Feeding the World in the 21st Century. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.